Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hey, wonderful ones. It's our 199th episode. Christ. So, I am talking to a man this week who's an absolute clever clogs about the environment, an actual sort of official academic clever clogs, but also a professional, very funny comedian called Matt Winning. He's an academic wizard about the environment. So we got deep into eating in the climate change avoidant way, whilst also having a very big laugh. He has got a new witty, hopeful, and practical and important book out all about climate change called Hot Mess. Thanks for listening to Hoovering. Spread the word about it along with a bit of Christmas cheer. I don't think we'll be doing much getting off under the mistletoe this year, will we, with the old COVID? So I reckon instead just sort of text someone, have you ever heard of a podcast called Hoovering? Because they can't give anyone any pandemics with that. Do give the podcast a 5-star review wherever you got it from. Subscribe to it. It helps other people find it. If you've got spare dosh knocking about, go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and you will see brilliant things. I'll swap you in exchange for as little as £2 a month. Honers clubs and Bill Murray previews are things coming up to tell you about in January, February and March, actually, in North London, the opposite end of London to where I live. I am running lots of new material nights. I run a new material night called Honers Club. It's in Camden. There's one in January, one in February, three in March. They're all where I'm going to be doing a full preview of my new show, Wench. And I'm going to be joined by brilliant other comedians there. Some so famous, I can't say who they are. But others include Izzy Sooty, Mark Watson, Sophie Duker. We're going to have a absolute gas, and it's only £6 in. Or if you want to just see me come and do a preview of Wench, you don't want to be out for the whole night, but you're prepared to spend an hour with me while I work together what will eventually become a new show, but for now is some thoughts and jokes in a row, come and see me preview Wench at the Bill Murray Comedy Club in Angel. It's such a cool little space, and I've just booked a bunch of dates in there in January and in February. I would love to see you at one of those. Also, we've got a Hoovering Live in the diary, lads. Saturday the 5th of February at 5:30 p.m. we're having a pizza party as part of the Leicester Comedy Festival. If you're a patron who's kind enough to wang the podcast a fiver a month, you've already got a discount code for that waiting for you in your Patreon inbox. Links to everything I've just mentioned and also to everything interesting that Matt and I talk about in this podcast are, as ever, in the podcast notes. I spend a long time on those, putting links in and capitalising stuff, so do use them. If, for example, he mentions an alcoholic beverage called Tia Maria, which I hadn't thought about for about 15 years. If you've never heard of that, I've put a link in. Okay, let's get into it. Matt and I hoovered over Zoom because, carbon reduction wise, it would be slightly batshit to have hoovered any other way, right? I drove 5 hours to Wales to talk to Matt. Anyway, yeah, we hoovered over Zoom because he's an environment saver. And we both had lunches which were made up of foods which were about to become dreaded waste. I've made it sound disgusting. Rest assured, my lunch was, as you'll hear, fucking delicious.
So, I haven't read it all yet. I've just read the food stuff in it. Because it was relevant for this.
Yeah, of course.
It's made me very excited to read the rest. Also, I'm such a nerd that not starting with the beginning of a book in itself gave me a half a boner. I was like, who is this new rebel bastard? Cool bitch. Just starting a book from the
I'm
end.
Just going to open up chapter 18. Well, I can't remember what chapter it is and just fucking go from there. Yeah.
Quite far in. So it's called Hot Mess. And it... from what I've read so far, it's a really funny, light-hearted, but also packed with information take on the state of climate change, but also just practical, realistic ways we can genuinely make a difference.
Yeah.
And must.
And must, yeah, exactly.
Lovely. So we've gone with that in mind for we haven't gone anywhere. We've stayed at home for the climate.
We're doing this on Zoom. Yeah.
And had the most waste, because it does feel like... the number one thing to do climate-wise, eating... I think a lot of people think it's cut out all meat and dairy, but actually waste avoiding, even more handy.
It's. I wouldn't say it's more handy, but I would say it's much easier to do.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's still pretty big. It's not like it's not... both of them are fairly large in terms of what you could do as an individual. Like, basically, changing what you're eating and... not wasting what you're eating. So it's not like we're not telling people like you need to eat loads less, although maybe from a health
different bits of the world and stuff
exactly
like that.
What's
become a normal portion size in America,
so
it's just bigger than everywhere else.
Yeah, so it accounts for about I think the estimates suggest something like 8% of global emissions is just food waste.
Wow.
So like you could easily, if we just didn't make stuff that we don't eat, then you're already kind of off to a flying start. So I think the figure that I quote in the book that's banded about is that 30% of all food produced worldwide is just goes to waste.
Yeah.
So that's like almost a third of everything.
The food produced doesn't end up being eaten.
Which is mad.
Absolutely batshit. And I think the other thing people assume a lot is that it's the manufacturers and supermarkets, etc., that are causing most of the waste. But the bit that actually I was like, whoa, because I think I'd thought that a little bit. Like, there's only so much you can do, but of course you can do more. But what impact is it going to have? But it also says that half of food waste in Europe is done in the household.
Yeah.
So that is exactly, that's 50% of it impact we could be making if we didn't waste so much in the house. So what have you got for lunch? I have to say, I've seen a photo of it and it is more photogenic than mine.
You think? Mine's very red. It's a very red meal that I've got.
You haven't got the full rainbow there. You've gone red and brown.
I didn't have any greens left. I have... in terms of trying to, well, the problem is, my wife did the waste, like cooking all the stuff that might run out 2 days ago, and I hadn't told her that this is what I was going to do for the podcast. So she did a really good, like veggie, you know, meal with lots of noodles and stuff like that, like a kind of stir fry, basically carrots and stuff. Really tasty. We had that on Saturday. And then I went, oh, I was supposed to do this for you like 2 days later.
Yeah.
Hadn't remembered. So I scrambled about trying to find what I could get. So there are leftover mashed potatoes from last night that I made.
Oh, yes.
Which are great. So I decided I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with a Beyond Meat sausage.
Lovely.
Which is like a vegan... the burgers are even better, but the sausages are actually pretty good. I really like them.
Great. Have you had a Richmond meat free?
I've not tried the Richmond ones yet. Are they good?
I think they've changed the game.
Right.
They're the closest thing
you can possibly get. I'll need to try them.
Now that I've had that, I don't understand why I'd ever need to have a normal sausage. There are certain things where you're like, IKEA meatballs. Went to IKEA recently and was like, that's the same. I don't believe, given a taste test,
I could tell the difference.
The difference between, yeah.
And you know, I think a lot of people are sort of these, obviously they're quite processed taste sort of stuff, but I still absolutely love that stuff.
Me too.
That is 100% aimed at me. And what am I going to do? Am I going to start learning completely brand new recipes to cook how I think about cooking from scratch? Or am I just going to replace what I already have with something that's sort of the same, in my opinion, most of the time? I think it's going to be the rest of my life. I think the rest of my life is going to be a process of very slowly learning how to cook differently.
Yeah, okay.
Because
fine.
The thing I am best at cooking is meat. Like, right. I'm like one of these classic, like,
damn it. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm trying to sort of move away from that as much as I possibly can and have done. And it's been, so much easier when I'm like, oh, what's that? A vegan burger that's really good? Oh, I might just cook us some nice burgers tonight then.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I've had lots of different phases, which anyone who's listened to this podcast for the whole nearly 4 years it's been going will be fully conversant in. I started as pretty much vegan, and then it's been a steady moral decline, Matt, as time's gone on. But I have, over time, I do prefer, if I'm going to eat completely a vegan meal, then I would prefer to have like less processed stuff, and I'm really into like pulses and lentils and dals and things like that. But my missus is a vegetarian and doesn't like, she's like, oh god, about lentils, which I fully get. Like, they smell of Brighton, and they like, do you know, like that kind of hempy kind of like slops. It's like, no, I get it, I do get it. She's just not into that, and she would much rather have like a corn mozzarella pesto escalope any day over something sort of very wholesome and beansy.
The whole beans thing. I mean, I feel like, again, it's something that I could get into a bit, but I'm not gonna like, you get people that are like 100% beans, that's what they're doing.
You can smell them coming.
And it's fine, but I couldn't make that who I am.
No, I don't think I can make that who I am. When it comes down, when it boils down to a matter of identity, maybe one day, we'll see. So I've got, you didn't finish saying.
I didn't finish yet. So I've got beans. So basically I've got bangers and mash and beans and a very sad looking red pepper that was going off. And I was like, well, you're going in as well here. Because
what did you do with it? Just fry her up a bit?
Yeah, just fried her with the sausage. What I would have liked is a different coloured one, so the preferably green, so that there was something.
Kind of touched upon your rainbow today,
but it's very much a red pepper, red beans, a sort of black and red sausage, and some yellowy grey leftover mashed potatoes.
You stuck to the brief. You know, it was that pepper that needed eating, so
it needed done. And normally we have quite a lot of it, like green veg. Like we've got a veg drawer that's normally pretty full.
Yeah,
and I was like, great. That's what I'm going to use for this. And then I looked at it yesterday and went, we've used it all. Oh no. Well,
we're recording on a Monday and I get a veg and fruit and veg box. I do get more fruit and veg than that, but I get one called Odd Box.
Oh yeah.
Who use up stuff that's either been rejected from the supermarket.
Nice.
Because it's surplus or it's the wrong shape or size. And I don't I quite like it being a surprise what's in there. But I thought anything off there would have been fair game to use today for mine.
That's very true.
And I do love, I think there's something really satisfying about using up a pepper that's gone quite leathery. Because it just, you feel like a really big brave soldier. Whereas I've got a very unphotogenic lunch, but it's delicious. Like, I don't feel like I've sacrificed anything. My missus got a curry on Saturday night takeaway, which I didn't partake in because I'm not afraid to say I'd passed out at 8 p.m. on the sofa. So she ordered enough in case I woke up. So there was a whole curry left over. So I've got, it's called Akahara, and it's got, it's definitely got green beans, carrots, tomatoes, sweet corn, onion. I think there's potato in there. And it's quite mild, but really delicious. And actually, 2 days on for a curry from cooking, for me, is the sweet spot. Like, it could, it's actually yummier than when she had it.
I don't think I've ever managed to last 2 days.
Okay.
You know, it's normally like the next day you're like, I'm going to, this is great. I'm going to take this. But
I'd do it for breakfast, would you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I would do it for breakfast.
I remember really shocking my younger sister when she saw me having a takeaway curry for breakfast the next day. She's like, what are you doing? I was like, no, this is allowed. The only meal that's not allowed for breakfast, I'd say, is soup.
You think?
I did try it once and I felt sad.
I don't think there's anything that isn't allowed for breakfast.
Okay. Here we go. Well, you're a truer warrior than me. And I've put on top of the curry, purely because it needed eating up, and also I find it delicious, and I know it's good for your gut and everything, some just natural Greek yogurt, because we're talking on the 6th of December and it officially went off on the 2nd of December.
Brilliant.
And it absolutely is fine.
Great.
It's in a small sealed pot, and it's fine. And now here's the bits where I start to make a bit of a sacrifice. Is instead of cooking rice, which would be the natural thing to have with a curry, I've used up the crusty end of a dying loaf of bread. So I'm having toast and curry.
I think that is a genius idea.
Thank you. It's actually going really well. You'd have naan bread, so why not have...
exactly.
What was it? Like a malted sourdough loaf?
Rice is actually a lot worse for the planet than most people imagine. Yeah.
Talk to me.
I mean, I don't know quite enough about it, but because they sit in like wet fields, like paddy fields, there's like I think it's methane emissions that come off of that are
like a cow's burp.
Yeah, so it's really quite bad in terms of what you would imagine rice being as an impact compared to, say, like pasta. So I try and always eat pasta over rice if I possibly have the choice between the two, or bread, as you're doing just now, bread.
Yeah, bread.
But rice, my son seems to really love rice, and he also really loves Greek yogurt as well. We get through just like, he just eats like tubs of the stuff. So... Yeah, Greek yogurt and rice have become quite a staple of our household, and I spend a lot of my time cleaning both of those things off the floor.
The floor. Oh, crumbs.
Mm.
It's enough. How old is your son now?
He's 15 months.
Oh,
yeah.
Really fun, but also really difficult age to parent, I would say.
Very messy age. Very much if he's not happy with something, he likes to throw it. Throwing is the thing that he's found recently. So I'm going to take this. If I want this, I'm going to keep it and kind of tease you with it. And if I don't want this, I'm going to lob it at you.
Got it. There's one more element to my lunch.
Oh, great.
I don't know if I'm going to brave it. We'll see if we get that far. But there was, I'm going to show you it because I want some sympathy, a really tired section of grapefruit.
Oh.
It's been sat in the fridge for a good few days. It's gone quite sturdy.
Wow.
The outer segments.
Yeah.
The problem here is I don't really like grapefruit. I did.
I'm with you.
In the odd box.
Yeah.
I find them punitive bitter. I like bitter things, and I'm not that into really sweet things. So I should like them. Every time one turns up in my life, uninvited always, I will give it another go just in case, because I think that's so interesting how much your taste buds change over the course of your life.
Yeah. I'm with you, though. I think we're pretty much in agreement on everything thus far, because grapefruit, yeah. I don't know when you're supposed to have it. People have it for breakfast. We're talking about breakfast before. People have it for breakfast. I don't get that.
What a way to start the day.
Jesus, that is a horrible way to start your morning.
Yeah. My son asked to try it because it looks like an orange. He's six now, mine, and he was so... I mean, I love it that he wants to try it. And his face... But he kept it together. Like, he really kept it together. And I went, do you think you're going to ask to try that again? And he just sort of very sort of went, no. No, never again. Okay.
Never speak of this again. Let's get his
try. Yeah, it was. Is this a trauma response? I want to talk about, because your book is also so hopeful. It's all full of all these, like, incredible statistics, but there's also so much useful, just practical stuff. And I think, you know, we're in the run-up to Christmas, which I want to talk about your Christmas eating.
Yeah,
why not? But I really want to know, I mean, Christmas, actually, I feel like increasingly in terms of the media output for Christmas, waste reduction does come into it a lot. I mean, ultimately it's a time of indulgence, but it does seem to be like there's nothing you cook at Christmas that there isn't brilliant, massive recipes free on the internet for what to do with your leftovers. So actually, I feel like, I don't know, weirdly, that's not a time where I worry too much about waste. But just in terms of practical ways in which people can reduce waste, there are, like, obviously the bougie privileged ways, like, you know, buying organic or stuff that's not in packaging, getting a fancy fruit and veg box from some kind of nice little niche bougie farm supplier, which is all good and well. If you can afford it, do it. But ultimately, I think it is also interesting and good to talk about the far more accessible ways of reducing waste, even just in your household.
Yeah.
So let's go. We can take turns.
I mean, the main thing is using your freezer.
Right.
Is just, you know, if you have stuff left over, or if you make loads of stuff, freeze it. Yeah. And freezing and planning ahead.
Yeah.
And I'm getting there very slowly. Mm-hmm. And that's only really from now having a very small child and actually having to think about the week ahead a bit more.
Yeah.
The first thing to say is, absolutely nobody's perfect. Never beat yourself up about it and never be like, I didn't do it this one time. That's it, over. Like, you know, it's always like, well, you try next, you know, try again. I think... just if you can plan ahead and you can freeze big batches of stuff, it's absolutely the way to go. The difficulty then is, like, you almost need little holders. I guess it feels like more plastic and stuff, doesn't it? But you need stuff that's the right size so that you're like, well, this is one portion or this is two, you know. So again, it's quite a lot of planning to do.
But there are things you can use. I stick my Tupperwares in the freezer and just don't fill them up too high because it'll expand a bit. So you can use your Tupperwares in there.
Absolutely.
And I know it's plastic, but there's so many uses you can get out of it. If you do get a takeaway, you can keep the trays that they come in the takeaway and put them in the freezer again and again with different stuff inside it.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that always feels like a big waste is when you do get takeaways that you're like, oh, this is coming in another box of another thing that I like... I've just got rid of the last one.
and I tell you what, and it does also feel like this, again, the more money you've got to spend on the fancier takeaway, the more likely it is to come in cardboard. So there's a bit of vicious circling there. But also, I think another really good one that saves money is really, so my partner really doesn't like eating out of date stuff, or she's, in fairness, got actual OCD, and it's and the one of the ways in which, like, a dip that's been dipped in by too many people too many times, stuff like that, whereas I'm a complete trollop and go fully the other way. So I feel like I do spend quite a lot of my life eating way out of date stuff just so that it doesn't, but also I'm never ill, And so I think even if you're like, no, no, if it says it's gone off, it's gone off, be mindful that there's a really big difference between, on some things, there's a display until.
Yep.
Followed by a best before, followed by a use by.
Yeah.
And actually, best before doesn't mean use by.
Yeah.
It means recommended, check it.
Yeah.
So I got today, and this is what I mean in terms of saving money, I bought two boxes of eggs. Both were half price, and eggs are quite spendy at the moment, I think, especially if you want like nice ones like Bertha Browns or any of those fancy pants ones with a golden yolk or whatever. They were half price, even though they were, because they were display until today, but they're best before 13th. So you've got another week, a whole week. I'll get through those in the next 3 or 4 days. Yep. So I didn't even have to. And then even then, they're probably fine beyond that if you keep them in the fridge.
Absolutely. And I think it's a weird kind of societal thing, isn't it? It's sort of like we, you know, the people who are spending the extra money on the veg boxes are slightly at times looking down on people for buying stuff that's, you know, maybe just about to go out of date or best before. And you're like, well, actually they're doing
the same thing you're doing, the same with thing your own box,
you know. It's so, just people are doing what they're, what is within their capabilities, within their, you know. So it's really just about finding what you know, you as an individual have the capacity to do in that sense.
I agree. And you mentioned some really good apps in your book that I hadn't heard of.
I've used one called Too Good To Go, which tells you sort of local places. I'm not sure exactly how wide ranging it is. I work, or certainly did before COVID, regularly in central London now from time to time. And it'd be quite good at going and getting stuff that was basically about to go out of date, or like lunches that, you know, later in the afternoon, so at 3 o'clock you could go and pick up a lunch from somewhere that was like then half price or whatever, and then you can have that later on in the day. So I started using that a bit.
Have you ever managed to hit up an Itsu within the last half hour?
Some of them do it, and so I've found that most, some places do, but the one that was always near my work never seemed to do it, because I think
bastards.
I'm sure it was always really annoying, but I have done it once or twice, and it was
what a feeling. So basically, the last half hour before they close in some of their bigger branches, all the cold sushi is half price. Oh my God. Stuff of dreams.
Great days.
Take it home and have it tomorrow. Yep. Great days.
So yeah, no, that sort of thing's really, really great as well. But as you say, it's like you can pick stuff up, and it depends what it is. Obviously, some stuff's more risky than others in terms of going off.
Sushi being up there, I suppose.
Sushi, yeah.
Never been ill.
No, I think I've only ever had food poisoning once in my life, and it was a burger from a university, like, you know, union or something, like decade or more ago. Yeah. I think that's it. I think it's the only time I've ever had food poisoning.
I had it when I was a teenager, because my aunt had got us, she'd been to Cornwall and she brought us some Cornish pasties, and mum put them in the freezer, not having realised they'd already been frozen.
Right.
And we both got really ill then, but that was a long, long time ago. Although a few years after that, mum did admit she did worry that we were maybe going to die. That's fun. Thanks for not saying it at the time. And then more recently, really recently, I had an oyster at a party, and I thought, and I had nearly 48 hours later, I had one terrible day. But I've since learnt, because I investigated it for anybody else at the small bash, got ill, didn't hear back. And then later the friend said, oh, no, a handful of people did. But what they think had happened is because some people did get ill who didn't have an oyster, and some people had loads of oysters and didn't get ill, etc. That somebody had attended the party whose partner had the tail end of norovirus.
Yeah, that sounds...
So we might have all just got a little...
Yeah, that sounds much more likely.
Yeah.
I love oysters, by the way. Great.
I love oysters. I mean, and I'm so relieved I had a bit of norovirus and not oyster.
Yeah, no, because you don't want to put off that for the rest of your life.
No, I don't. I love them too much. I'm glad you love them too. They're quite good, aren't they, climate-wise?
Yeah, I mean, fish, there's different levels, but obviously you have to go out and... collect fish, often using boats that are run on fossil fuels. But, you know, you're not feeding, you're not growing lots of plants and other things to feed fish the same way that you are with lots of meat, you know, and you're not taking up, I guess, land that humans could otherwise use. It's in the sea anyway, you know, it's sort of already happened. So, yeah, I mean, I think oysters are pretty good from my climate perspective.
You had a really nice bit in that I really loved in the book, because I felt like, oh God, I felt that. and I had a really nice bit of confirmation bias where as much as it feels like pretty obvious, if anyone's ever done any looking into the impact of especially cows, but meat growth for the growing population of humans, it's unsustainable for us to keep eating the amount of meat and fish that we're eating at this point if population's going to keep growing at this point. Isn't it something like in the next 30 years we'd have to make as much food as we've made in all of history again?
Yeah, basically between the turn of the century and 2050, so over the course of the first 50 years of this century, we have to produce, because of the growing population, roughly about, it's not bang on, but it's roughly about the same as has ever been produced in the history of humankind. So
that's so much food.
It's a lot of food. That's and so food. You know, obviously we've got much better at growing food and other things, but then we're also doing that at the same time as altering the world's climate.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would be a difficult thing to do without climate change, but the whole point is just to say, you know, you're trying to do something that's sort of stretching human capacity while making it all much less, much harder for us to actually achieve it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's
bizarre.
A tricky one.
But again, yeah, not hopes, like the massive dent that you can make in things by even quite small changes. And the other thing I you were saying in there are documentaries, there's some very famous Netflix documentaries, and in the one hand I think you make the point, which they've been kind of, a lot of the information in those films has been debunked. I mean, it's just not accurate, it's kind of fairly sort of like overinflated, and I think it's what a lot of you know, they're documentary makers. What's mad is that now we live in a world where people are so distrusting of the actual news. This must be so infuriating for an academic. Like,
we
get our news now from documentaries who are under no moral obligation to have told you the truth anyway. Yeah. They're making a piece of art that is allowed to be entirely designed to sway you to their opinion without any, they're not beholden to anything legally. They can put out information without, it's not like a court of law, a government, a news outlet who are under a moral obligation, if not a legal one, to not sell you, to tell any lies. And madly, we believe these Netflix documentaries like Cowspiracy and Seaspiracy, even though they're kind of full of shit. And as I say all that, part of me also thinks, oh, does it matter if they're full of shit if it makes people eat a bit less meat and fish?
Yeah,
or
which
it sways someone who was like, oh, fuck vegans.
Yeah, yeah. Which is clearly
a bit more conscious thinking when it comes to how they choose to eat.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's clearly what, I mean, obviously I don't know these people, so I can't say that for them, but that's clearly their point, I think, is more like, whatever we can do to sway people, we're we're achieving the goals that we want to achieve. But at the same time, you know, how you do that then affects the overall discourse about, you know, how, where do you, as you say, where do you get your news from? Where do you get your information from? And where, you know,
I'm getting it from your new book.
So, but it's kind of the same. It's the same as what you, my book is the same as what they're doing. It's just hopefully mine are backed up with facts, because I'm an academic. I feel like I can't completely bullshit all the time. But it's the same thing, because it is really effective at getting people engaged. So what you do is you entertain them, and you make, you give them a narrative and you give them a story, and that way people are actually like, oh, I'll listen to the, and they'll come out with these facts, and I'll have them repeated to me by people that, you know, don't listen to anything when I tell them, but because it's been on some Netflix documentary, they're like, oh, Matt, did you know this? You know, I'm pretty sure my dad was talking about salmon recently, and I was just like, cool, yeah, I mean, I mean, it's great.
A little bit about that, Dad.
Yeah, but it's good that people are engaged in it.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what I'm trying to do here with a book as well, is trying to get people entertain people and give them something to kind of, when they get these facts, it sticks with you a lot more, because you're sort of. I mean, with those documentaries, obviously, it's not in as much in a positive way. It's more you're entertained in a sort of like, scared way. Whereas I guess my book is, I'm trying to go with different.
I'd rather be laughed into compliance.
That's what I'm hoping. Some people, I mean, I think scared works for some people, but I think it doesn't work for everybody. Definitely doesn't work for everybody, and so that's a tricky one to kind of balance.
It's also a world of absolutes, which I think people are drawn to, because it's clear and it's black and white. If you watch those and you believe everything in it, you go, well, then I can't eat an animal product again,
including
any seafood or any fish. You like, it's so black and white for you, and I think people are drawn to that because it's like, well, it's clear what I do. But actually, it does sort of show a fundamental misunderstanding of self for most humans, in the sense that absolute rules aren't often sustainable ways to live, in terms of realistic ways to live. It's why crash diets don't work. It's why, you know, it's not a life overhaul. It's not a small lifestyle change, that incremental positive. One thing that I have no idea about that it says in the book is that you say, in terms of climate impact, it's not that much more useful to be vegan than to be vegetarian. That fascinated me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it is better to be vegan than vegetarian, but the difference between moving from one to the other is nowhere near the difference between moving from, say, a heavy meat diet to a pescatarian diet. Like people moving that amount is much more important.
Totally. Or going like, or just, I might have beef once a month.
Exactly. Reducing.
I might have fish once a week, and I might have,
So that is the main thing to start, because it's the biggest impact you can have, and it's obviously the first thing you would do. You're not going to go from one extreme to the other extreme. Most people aren't. There are a few people that do, and then those people, as you say, can often become quite hardline about things and be like, "You can't, if you care about climate change, you can't eat meat." And you're like, "What by saying that and by putting that message out there, you're doing far more harm."
I agree, because then you've got like the people who. That you make people hate planty eaters because they find them, you know, earnest, smug, all of that, you know, definitive. What's the word? Divisive. It's divisive.
Exactly.
Same as Brexit, same as anti-vaxxers versus, you know, the world isn't that black and white. No. There's so much more nuance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's the same with, you know, a lot on climate change. It's the same, as you say, with the examples you've given. The world's very nuanced. People have different reasons for doing things. People have, you know, different approaches. Somewhere in the middle is often the truth. But, you know, I think it's trying to give people information so that they can make their own decisions and they can understand roughly the different scales of what you're talking about as well. And another fact in one of the other chapters that I give is that going, I think, vegan for 2 years. So say you just, what, you know, all of a sudden switch from what you are, you know, say someone that eats a sort of meat heavy diet to vegan for 2 years, that same amount of carbon that you would save from going vegan for 2 years is roughly equivalent to like one return flight from London to New York.
Fucking hell. 2 years.
So, you know,
eating
again,
plant based only.
Yeah. So again, it puts in context.
Not go to New York.
Yeah. And obviously the idea would be like, you don't trade these things off against each other. It's great if you don't do one and you don't do the other. But at the same time, understanding what decisions you're making in your life, whether it is food, but whether it's other aspects of kind of related to climate change, getting the perspective on what's, you know, the bigger impacts and what's the smaller impacts, I think people still don't quite grasp those things, if you know what I mean. And so hopefully, again, that's kind of what I'm trying to do with the book, is just get people a bit more information to make more informed decisions, to put things in perspective, that sort of thing.
Crumbs.
I know. Crumbs.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I could talk for a million years, Matt. I find it so interesting. And I feel like we've learned so much more in terms of just what's been made mainstream knowledge as well. Mm-hmm. Not just, you know, it filters down from you in academia to us eventually. But things have come on at a real pace in the last, even since I started doing this podcast. Just
yeah,
the
last
access.
I'd say since summer 2018 for me was when this all kicked off.
Right.
And I mean, I've been working on climate change for, 14 years now.
Wow.
And I only started doing comedy about it in the end of 2016. And then I'd done sort of, a show in 2017, a show in 2018. And then by 2019, everybody was talking about climate change by that summer, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of comedy, even like I say very briefly in the book, you know, in 2019, every comedian had a joke about climate change in their show, which was not the case before at all. And it was just because it was part of, you know, the zeitgeist. It was part
psyche.
Of and it's really, I think, the first time. There was one time in the mid-2000s, sort of 2006, 2007, where it sort of started becoming part of the public psyche and then really dropped off the agenda.
Because of probably, well, probably can't have been helped by the massive recession.
No, I think that probably made a bit of a difference. And then there was a bit of sort of pushback from, shall we say, vested interests around the world who didn't want people to be interested in solving climate change. So there was really a kind of kickback then, and it was probably a fairly easy kickback because we weren't seeing as much in terms of the impacts of climate change. But what happened in 2018 was we had a massive drought because there was, there was 3 weeks, the drought happened in a few different places, but the main thing was a heat wave for 3 weeks in the summer of 2018. I don't know if you remember it, but I was living probably not far from you at the time, in kind of south east London, and it was just unbearable for weeks. You know, you could barely sleep at night.
The pavement smelt like the pavement smelt like it was melting. It smelt of holidays.
Yeah,
it smelt of like. Yeah, August, Greece.
Proper, But the UK is not really designed for it. You know, we've not really got the infrastructure or what do we do with our bins and, you know, our food bins and other things like that.
We haven't got the attitude, Matt, really, if I'm honest.
No.
We whinge.
Yeah. I mean,
we whinge when things get really hot or cold.
And we've got the potential for things to get either much hotter or... if there were some very extreme changes in the climate, like the slowing of the Gulf Stream, then you could end up with the UK also in winter becoming like, Alaska or something like that. It's unlikely that that's going to happen, but it is a sort of very high risk, small probability event that could happen where you end up with the UK having really hot summers and really, really cold winters. At the very least, we're going to have much hotter summers like we did in 2018.
Because we've always been quite a temperate country historically.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the sense that we do have a very different summer to winter. but within
a quite a narrow,
exactly, yeah, quite sort of centre ground temperature.
Exactly, and the UK's buildings, a lot of which are really quite old, are not designed for anything that goes outside of that range. So then you get problems when we do have heat waves. With,
I'm not just talking about your front door starting to get all sticky when it's swollen in the summer. No, like fully like falling down. I hear you.
And it's the same with, again, to talk about, not to talk about COVID too much, but it's the same with, you know, the elderly are the most at risk then, because, and people with, you know, heart conditions, other things are going to really struggle when it goes beyond what the buildings that they live in are designed to cope with, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty tricky.
And then you're fucking the climate again by trying to make your living spaces and workspaces a more hospitable temperature, right? With air conditioning and with heating.
Well, that's the thing. What do you do? Like, yeah, you have to, you need renewables to be powering air conditioning to solve that problem. Otherwise, again, you're using more fossil fuels, which is definitely happening a lot more in, you know, places in the Middle East that have to use a massive amount of air conditioning to, you know, just so that people can do stuff. Staying inside
and pass out and get off the plane.
But yeah, there was a fact that I talk about in the book very briefly about how because of that heat wave in 2018, chips in the UK, because potatoes didn't get enough water, chips were an inch shorter over the on average over the following year. And I was just like, that is not a world I want to grow, you know, my children to grow up in. How are you meant to dip wee chips?
A tiny wee chip.
What are you going to do with wee chips? And you know, anyway, I'll let people read. I won't spoil the bit too much, but you know, I'm just talking about how big chips are, like, you know, that's a joy. Really, it's nice. One of the best really things great. You can get. Is, I'm pretty sure I saw a thing on Twitter about some kid that had, in maybe Liverpool or something, had found like the biggest chip in the world recently.
Oh yes.
And people were giving him grief for it, saying he'd made it up or he'd photoshopped it or something. But I mean,
he could have.
I mean, who knows? But it's still, it's worth getting excited about, in my opinion.
It is. Yeah. How lovely. Has your son got it's a brilliant book. This is very off topic, called The Enormous Potato.
Oh.
It made me think of that. It might be a nice Christmas present, if not.
Great.
It's about a great big potato.
And I can be like, this is, if we don't have climate change, we won't have great big potatoes. Yeah, yeah.
Like basically a history book.
This will just be a normal potato will be a great big potato.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I feel like we've done some very grown-up stuff there, and I'm going to ask you some bit slightly more nonsensey things.
Cool.
As Christmas looms, I would love to know what your Christmas eating rituals are with your family.
So, it's a bit of a mix now. So, my wife and her mum, I tend to, it depends where we are.
Yeah.
So Christmas kind of moves about sometimes. My wife and her mum always like smoked salmon bagels for brekkie with some champagne.
Yes!
And so,
I like the sound of your wife and mother-in-law.
So that is what I've had the last couple of years, which I'm not against. I tend to go small on the champagne in the morning because I feel like
there's nothing... to be ashamed about a Bucks Fizz, I would say, in place of a full champagne.
So I like to go as long as I can on Christmas Day. So I find that a lot of people peak far too early and end up really, you know, not having enough food and then drinking too much early on kind of getting tired and once they've had their meal, falling asleep. I'm very much of a very little drink, as little drink as I possibly can, you know, maybe one or two things.
Yeah.
You have something for breakfast and then you're kind of waiting probably for quite a while. You might have some crisps or something on the way, and then you're waiting essentially until about
Quality Street.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. If somebody's giving you some Quality Street, great.
Yeah.
But you're sort of living off of fumes for the next 6 hours, maybe.
Quite literally off of sherry fumes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely.
And then it's the meal, and I try to eat as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
Now, again, it depends where we are as to what I would have. My parents and I go to my aunt's house sometimes for Christmas, and they often have like a big smoked salmon patty thing for like a starter.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's a lot of salmon involved. And then...
Yeah.
And then...
Is that the Scottish way?
I don't know, I guess. I don't really know where it comes from. I don't think I could say it's a Scottish way. It just seems to be weird thing that's done in our family. There's like a big kind of patty meal, like a big course. Then you've got a soup course after that.
Ooh.
Yeah, often carrot and coriander soup.
Get fucked. I don't love that flavour soup.
I mean, at this point in time, I'm normally, I'll have the soup, it's fine. And then you're going a big... whatever it is, you know, you're just going everything. You're getting turkey, you're getting often glazed ham.
Oh, that's a Boxing Day or a Christmas Eve thing. A gammon.
A gammon. And then lots of parsnips, Brussels sprouts, mashed potatoes. So there's always, at least if it is at one of my aunt's house, my uncle's from Northern Ireland, so there has to be at least two or three different types of potatoes.
Whoa!
On the table.
This is new to me.
Yeah.
What are we talking? All different types of what? A russet, a King Edwards, and a not like a sweet potato.
No, I don't think we've had sweet potato on Christmas Day. No, I just mean in terms of you'd have roast potatoes, and mashed potatoes as options.
Oh yeah.
And then you're not going to have a baked potato.
Mashed potatoes on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
No one's having a roast potato on Christmas.
A baked potato. And then occasionally, is there another one? I think there's just different types then. So some people like their mashed different ways. So there's normally a few different mashes as well as some roasts.
Wow.
And then you've got lots of gravy, obviously. The little sausage guys, pigs in blankets.
Mashes.
I mean, you've got everything. But normally then I have that and then I start drinking heavily.
Nice.
And try and last for as long as I can. And then, it's, you know, you're getting into it. By then you're going into, you know, sometimes I'll have half a bottle of Tia Maria by myself.
Oh, Matt, I really love to hear it. What a delicious choice of beverage.
It's Christmas tea.
I fucking love Tia Maria. Deeply underrated.
Very underrated. And on a, you know, you want something sweet. You want something, it's a sweet day.
It's a sweet, sweet day.
So some chocolates and some Tia Maria, and you're there, you're powering through.
That's for when you're into getting into any games, if you're a gamer.
Exactly. Fan.
You need
games.
Small, sugary, saccharine drinks that are quite high alcohol content.
Really good games around then as well. That's what you're after.
Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Talk to me about eating growing up. Were you picky? Oh, did you have someone cooking for you at home who's good at that?
Oh, yeah. Let me see. Now, there's a couple of things here that I actually thought would be worth mentioning. So, first of all, my catchphrase growing up was that I don't like last bites. And my mum always says that.
Lovely.
So this is always brought up to me all the time. Oh, Matthew, he says, doesn't like last bites. So apparently that was what I did as a toddler. I was always like, no, I don't have last bites. And so always refused. And I sort of took it into adulthood where I would always leave.
Is that because you were constantly being told, one more bite, finish the last bite, you've got to eat what's on your plate, even when you were like, ugh.
I guess so. But I don't feel like I was forced. I wasn't one of those families that were like, you have to finish everything on your... You know, I think I was kind of given the option, but I was always like, no, I'll just leave. It's better for... And I don't know if I ever thought that it was better for my, you know... I won't have eaten quite as much, so I won't feel as full, or I won't put on as much weight if I just leave the last bite of every meal.
Oh, really? You cared about that?
I don't know if I did or not, or if it was just... I really don't
understand. Not as a toddler.
Well, not as a toddler, but I think maybe taking it into sort of being a teenager and adulthood, maybe a sort of being told that that was what I did then became part of what I did. But no, never picky. Really, my brother and I are the least... picky children you could ever imagine in terms of food. So we would eat absolutely everything. We were often regaled with stories of us going on holidays with other families where like the other kids wouldn't eat food that was touching each other, and we were like like a seafood platter together. Like,
your parents get to be so smug when you're
I think
really nice.
I think that they pretty much were. So No, growing up, very much would eat absolutely anything. Didn't like eggs until quite, or mushrooms until quite recently.
Funny.
Fine with them now, really. I mean, I get it. It's the texture. I think it's the texture of both of them.
Okay. What, like a hard-boiled egg is a bit too...
Yeah, yeah. Like a bit wobbly. Anything that's a bit wobbly, I find a little
scrambled's the worst,
bit.
Is it, for you?
Yeah, but now I'm fine. I just sort of... Right. I think I like everything, really. Ketchup is probably the only thing that I would put on a list of things that I detest.
That's funny, because some people... Yeah. That's the only way they can enjoy loads of other things.
I
is if ketchup
find that it in a way that I can't eat something if it's got ketchup on it.
Right. Okay. Crumbs.
Like if somebody, because some people just put ketchup
is
on
it
things.
Sweetness or the salmon? Sweetness. Or the combined. Yeah. It's the sweetness.
Too sweet and too doesn't taste like tomato to me. So it tastes like something unnatural, and I don't.
Yeah.
And the sweetness of it kind of just makes me. So sometimes, you know, people will have leftover things or whatever it is, or a breakfast where they're like, oh, do you want some of this? And I'm like, I can't touch. I actually would quite like to eat this, but if you hadn't put any ketchup on it, I'd have been able to do that. The other thing that I thought was worth mentioning was that I, in primary school, what year was that? So primary six, so I would have been maybe 10 years old. Mm. I starred in our primary school play, which was called Jimmy on the Road to Super Health. So we're talking mid-90s here.
Why is that tickled me so much? I can't see it with a title like that being straight to a transfer to the Royal Court.
And I played the
titular. Did it get a Western?
I don't think we did, no. I don't think we
Jimmy
did.
Jimmy on the Road to Super Health.
And I played the titular Jimmy. And I remember having to do a solo of Food Glorious Food at one point. And I don't remember any other part of what that play was or what it involved. I'm quite intrigued. I don't know. Where do schools get these plays sometimes?
I know.
Like,
fuck me.
Is somebody writing them for like primary schools? Or is.
Yeah. Someone's doing that for money.
Or I just.
Not much money, I imagine.
Could they not just put on Cats or something like that? Yeah. You know? Just take.
And actually, the dancing would have caused Jimmy quite a lot of super
help. Exactly. I don't know what Jimmy. I genuinely wish that I could regale you with like what. There must have been other songs in it, or there must have been other. I don't know if like someone was playing a sausage or something. Surely there must have been something like that. I can't remember. All I remember is that I was the main part and I had to sing Food Glorious Food.
Yeah.
And again, I can only remember the first two lines of
it. I wonder if some of your fellow pupils were dressed as vegetables.
Yeah. That's what I'm imagining happened.
Well, if they do make time travel accessible, I know where I'm going back to, and it's seeing you.
And surely that's led to, you know, me then doing comedy one day and then me, you know, talking to you here on a podcast about food, about a book. And it's all come from, you know, me doing a food-based play at the age of 10 years old.
Treading the board.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really fun. I love it. If you've got a hangover, what are you having?
I once had a hangover coming back on a flight from China.
Oh, goodness.
Quite a while ago now, and was introduced by the air steward to Bloody Marys.
Oh,
they made them on the way. And I just sat and for whatever it was, 10 hours and drank a few of those and felt absolutely terrific.
That is the way to go, actually. I mean, it's not a long-term solution.
No, it's a really bad solution.
You're meeting, meeting, you know.
No, you can. So there's two options. There is you do that, which isn't, as you say, it's not a long-term sustainable solution. So as someone that is into sustainability,
trying to promote that,
I think
water, have lots of water.
In the past, I would have been, being from the west of Scotland, I would have said a Roland square sausage and potato scone with brown sauce on it and a bottle of Iron Brew.
Oh, lovely. Full fat orange Iron Brew.
Yeah.
No sugar free.
So although my Scottish accent's maybe, it depends where you're from. It's not the strongest Scottish accent in the world, but I do have very much West of Scotland sensibilities when it comes to eating awful food. Because it's just great.
Really delicious.
But now I mean, you can't get square sausage where I live in England now, and I am trying to not eat as much meat. So
you can get amazing veggie versions of those things in Scotland now, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's from just above Glasgow, and the veggie black pudding, yes, and veggie haggis is.
I actually had a really bad veggie haggis when I went because I was at COP26 in Glasgow for the first week at the event in the kind of the main zone, and they had different food, and you know, so in the places where you could get lunch, and I thought, well, you know, I'm at this event, I should really try and make sure that I eat as sustainably as possible. And so I did have the veggie haggis one day, and it was absolutely rotten compared to compared to ones that I've had before. Like, I do a good veggie haggis, but it was really bad, and other people seem to like it, but I think once you've had really good ones, you can tell when they're not great.
You set your bar too high.
But black pudding as well, I mean, just so good.
A jellyfish stings a jelly baby and turns it into an evil mutant world smasher upper, and it's a really bad, oddly filmic apocalypse. Luckily, it's agreed to stop it and go back to being a normal, everyday jelly baby and jellyfish that have nothing to do with each other, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, agree to climb up and down all the trees in Norfolk and tap the top off each one on the head one after another without a break, all the while humming Jingle Bells. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero. You saved us all from a horrible, in fact, especially horrible for you, jelly-centric apocalypse, wibbly-wobbly apocalypse, by doing a physical feat that was obviously absolutely exhausting, and your mouth was busy, so you couldn't have any snacks because you were too busy humming Jingle Bells. So you are as hungry as it's possible to be, but because your reward is the adulation of all people for all time, you're also as happy as it's possible to be. What would be the feast of your dreams in this situation? It's the opposite of a last meal. You couldn't be happier, you couldn't be hungrier. This is a fantasy feast, so actually I don't care, I'm afraid, about consequences of the climate or health or anything. Not interested. I want this to be the absolute most joyful situation possible for you. What would you eat? What would you drink? And if you'd like to add a who with and where, you're very welcome to add a who with and where.
Oh, that is a terrific question. I really would quite like some jelly babies now.
Great.
Great sweet. Really good.
Great sweet. Classic.
I mean, there aren't that many bad sweets, but it's a good one. Now, the who, where, and when, not important.
Fine. Okay.
Really not important.
I'd love to hear it.
I think actually I would like it to be, regardless of what the food is, to be in an Indian restaurant.
Lovely.
Like, I just like being in an Indian restaurant, and
I hear you. It's quite a specific energy and vibe, isn't it? It's
great. Yeah. So really, and everybody's sitting around a big table. Just some friends and family. Fine. Great. What are we having now? Oh, I could have prepared. I could have spent days preparing for this answer. I wish I had. Crab is going to be the starter. Like for some crab claws.
Lush.
Maybe a bit of mayonnaise, something like that. So we're going seafood for a starter, and I'm going to go actually crab claws and white bait. That's what I'm eating for a starter.
Amazing, yum.
Because I'm a very much of the sea. Then, what are we doing for a main meal? Now, back in the day, I would have said a ribeye steak, because it is.
Well, you can again if you like.
Yeah.
Or do you want, as this is a fantasy feast, to have the first lab-grown ribeye steak that tastes exactly as good as a real one?
That's what I'm having.
That's what you're going to get.
With some potato, dolphin potatoes, dolphin wise, or whatever they're called.
Yeah, got it.
Some of those.
Whatever. I know what you mean. They're sliced up, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're creamy and delicious. Yeah.
And a ribeye. I'll cook it myself.
Yeah,
I'm not. I'm not.
Nice to hear.
Letting anyone else touch it.
Great.
And then I'm having a cheese plate.
Great. Why is that so funny? How you said
I'm having a cheese plate.
And I'm having a cheese.
I'm having a. I'm just. I'm doing it.
I'm going to say it. Really similar mouths.
Yeah.
I am really impressed by your choice of dinner.
Great.
That, is there? Have you got a specific cheese that must be included on that?
On the plate, you're going to have a Stilton of some sort.
Yeah, okay.
Nothing too. I'd say it's probably going to be French or British.
Okay.
Nothing too wet of a blue.
None of those sloppy Italian.
No, blues. No thanks. A little bit of something on it. What would you have on it? Like a little bit of. What do you call the stuff that's like
quince?
Yeah, something like that. Like a little touch of that, not much.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna have a good cheddar on there somewhere, and then just surprise me. Give me some. I want cheese from wherever you've got cheese.
Yeah.
And then I'm probably having an espresso and some Tia Maria after that, haven't I?
Yes, I'm glad Tia Maria came back for the end.
I think we're having it. I think we're going for... We're certainly having something at the end of it, just to round it all off. I think we're going for a Tia Maria. If they didn't have that, maybe an amaretto of some sort, or...
I love amarettos.
Or a limoncello. But I think we'll go Tia Maria just to...
They're going to have that, because remember, it's a fantasy.
Oh, they've got it. Great. No, I'm glad to hear that then.
Delicious. What a lovely man. Get his new book. It's so funny as well as wise. It's called Hot Mess and he's called Matt Winning. It's available from all the normal book selling holes, and he's on Twitter being very funny and a clever clogs. Simply, he's at Matt Winning, one word. Everything interesting we mentioned, as ever, is linked to in the podcast notes, which I will have pored over, so do use them. Come and see me do some stand-up if you like. I'm working up a new show, which I'm pretty confident I'm going to call Wench. Or any other gig. There's a list of all my gigs and tickets to get to come to them at my website, jessicafosterkey.com. That's also where you'll find links to both the preview on the 6th of February, but also the Hoovering Live that I'm doing on the 5th of February at 5:30 at the Leicester Comedy Festival. Perhaps if you are wondering what to get somebody for our Christmas prezzy, you could get them tickets to one of my previews, or... to the Leicester Comedy Festival Hoovering Live, or my preview there. Okay, cool. Feel free to support the podcast with 5-star reviews, recommendations in person, over the phone. Do people use a phone anymore? On the Twitter, in the Instagram. Why is it on Twitter and in the Instagram? Anyway, or if you want, you can support us with actual money. Go to Acast Supporter or Patreon. Links to those things as well are in the podcast notes. I'd love it if you just followed us on the socials at the Hoovering Pod. Follow me directly if you like at Jessica Foster Q. I post a lot of doing PE between the jokes, weightlifting mainly. Anyway, longer than a tweet. You want to get in touch, you want to send me an email. Tickets to see any of these live things I've just wanged on about, again, use my website, jessicafosterkey.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham, and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.